Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 612 for comics originally released on May 1st, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is DC's Year of the Villain number 1. This was a 25-cent special issue released right around the time of New Comic Book Day, well, a few days before on the 1st, although I think a number of stories were certainly leveraging the low-cost aspect of it for Free Comic Book Day.
Exactly.
And this kicks off the Year of the Villain.
Yes, it does.
And I cannot tell you how excited I am about this, because I'm not really excited about it at all.
I had a feeling you wouldn't be. You kind of like the heroes more.
I do. That's why it's called Superhero Comics, not Super Villain Comics.
But very true.
Nobody at DC seems to have gotten the memo.
Yes. And did they do this before at DC?
There was the Villain Month stuff they did around the time of Forever Evil, and that was 2013, 2014?
Yeah, I think that's the first year where they came out with all those weird covers and stuff like that.
The lenticular stuff, yeah.
Lenticular, yeah.
So, yeah, they're going back to the well kind of soon.
Yes, they are. And they've been building up to it. Some of the stories have been building up a little bit better than others, and but the price, you can't beat it. This was a killer price for the amount of material you got.
Certainly for 25 cents, you can't go wrong, and it's worth picking up on that ground alone.
Exactly. And you have top writers in here. You have Scott Snyder, his story that's from Justice League. You have Brian Michael Bendis with his story that he's been doing over Superman. And then you have James Tynion doing his story, which is also kind of Justice League.
Yeah. There are the three stories here. Let's go through them one by one. The first one of Doom. You know, I'm reading this, and it's like, okay, this is a little weird with Amanda Waller. I don't know if it really ties in exactly time-wise or where it fits in with what's going on with, I guess, Action Comics, where she's had some stuff going on with Leviathan and whatnot. It's clearly after that. But then when we get to the Oval Office, I'm like, well, geez, so much for Lex Luthor even pretending to be any sort of respectable businessman these days.
Yes, I was kind of surprised. That was a interesting opening and seemed to be the most out of whack with current comics, this issue.
Well, it had me questioning, was he ever really a respectable businessman in the current continuity? I mean, wasn't he originally introduced in the New 52 as being in like some sort of a special jail just for him because he was so smart and so bad?
Yeah, my first experience with him was when he was dressed up in a super suit.
Yeah, what's weird is, I mean, after Forever Evil, wasn't Lex and Captain Cold, weren't they members of the Justice League for a while?
Yeah, they were. He was a good guy, so that was weird. I saw him go from a good guy to now he's just gone, not just gray, just full-on evil, which is weird.
Yeah, but I mean, his backstory for me is completely confused. And I'm also wondering if that switch out of the Supermans they did around the time of Rebirth and that character's integration, or the integration of the pre-crisis Superman into the New 52 continuity, did that like rework Lex's background and history or what?
It could have. And that's something that I'm not completely sure how he has changed as much. I mean, I saw the change happen, but it didn't make a lot of sense. It just seemed like, hey, let's change direction when he went from being a rather good guy on the good side of things to now then he got a little bit, I'm not with you guys on this, to now I'm completely a villain, tyrant, and doing whatever I want.
One does not join or lead a group called the Legion of Doom if you have, you know, altruistic motives.
Exactly. So he has done a 180 completely.
I'm going to say a 360, maybe even a 720. It's pretty confusing. It's going in circles.
Yeah, but he's worse than he's ever been because, you know, traditional Lex Luthor, you see him as a businessman. You see him as a bad guy, but maybe being okay at certain times. There's no redeeming factor here.
Here, I would argue he's a bad businessman.
Yes, that's true.
When he's basically, yep, everyone's fired. They've got 5 minutes to get out of the building.
Yeah.
that can't be good for business. I don't care how much you need to have staff turnover. That's pretty abrupt.
Yeah, that was pretty yeah, abrasive.
It was dramatic. I'll give them that.
Yeah, and then it's weird because you have this thing kind of building up and some stuff that's happening in here. It seems like he's the smartest person that in the DCU, the way this is written. I don't know if that's always been the case, but they make him appear smarter than Brainiac to me.
He's certainly always been a genius and very smart. As to who's the smartest person in the DC universe, man, I don't know that that's ever been clear. Certainly he's up in the running. Brainiac's been up in the running, as have a number of other people at times. Superman, too.
Oh, yeah. So to me, he looks like he's the sharpest tool in the shed. In this story, the way it's written, they made Brainiac seem like that he's in awe of his intelligence.
Yeah, they certainly had Luthor one-upping Brainiac in here, which is a little unusual, but...
Something I didn't expect.
Yeah. Well, and Luthor definitely has a plan here, and I'm really hopeful that it's a good one.
Me too.
Because I always hate it with, they've got a plan, and when it's finally revealed, like, that was the plan? That's lame. I could have done better, you know?
Exactly. Hopefully something good. Something worthwhile.
Yeah, this was a good story. I thought it was entertaining, but it did highlight for me how much of a mess DC continuity is.
Yes.
And how just kind of, you know, all over the place some of this is. And just, I don't know, I'm not really excited about a year of villains.
Yeah, this story was, for me, I kind of rated the story's favorite, one in the middle and least favorite. This was my middle story. It got me okay, but it didn't get me super excited for Year of the Villain. I was just like, okay, that's cool. Could potentially be a good read depending on what they do with it. And okay, this thing at the end, obviously what they're showing it happened couldn't have happened. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, they seem to have overplayed their hand a little at the end. I rank the individual stories. For me, this was the best of the bunch.
Oh, okay, this was your favorite. Okay.
Yeah. But even so, it had some drawbacks, some weaknesses. And again, I'm curious where all of this is going, but... it makes me wonder about the direction of the DC universe.
And I can understand that.
The next story...
is called Leviathan.
Yeah, it was a little odd teaming up Green Arrow and Batgirl, and Green Arrow really got the short end of the script.
Yes, he did.
He's there for a bit, and then poof, gone.
It was more a Batgirl story, I felt.
It was, and this was another one that really highlighted to me how much of a mess DC continuity is. Because at one point, somebody who's in the shadows, and I really couldn't even tell who that was supposed to be, but was referring to her not only as Batgirl, but Oracle, mentioning she'd been in the Suicide Squad, the Justice League, Batman Incorporated, Gotham City PD, Birds of Prey, the Seven Soldiers of Victory. And I'm like, how much of that had really been pulled into this continuity before?
Yeah, that I'm not sure with the continuity, the mess, because I hadn't, you know, been through that. But I thought this guy knows pretty much everything. This person knows exactly who she is and everything she's done. So apparently it's tied in, yet at the same time it's not tied in. So I don't know how they're going to fix that.
I don't know. And again, I couldn't tell who that was supposed to be that was doing the talking and stuff.
I had a guess, but I don't know. I don't think I'm right.
Afterwards, tell me the guess, because I'm curious.
Okay.
You know, it had me wondering if I should be getting some of the recent issues of a title I dropped from DC, but that was all from that last page, which, frankly, had almost nothing to do with the rest of that story.
Yeah, I would say yes. Now, by the way, this one was my favorite of the stories, which is weird. I guess it wasn't your favorite, and the reason why is because even though not a lot of action happened, you could say, it got me excited to read more about it. I'm really into Bendis's Leviathan thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading this. I saw what played out with Batgirl and how it's building up. And I'm already into that story. So I was like, okay, I'm on board. I'm ready to go with this. And it seems like it's something bigger than not just the good guys. We've seen Leviathan. The good things have been taken out. Now we're finding out at the very beginning of this, it's basically all organization is being taken out. Evil organization. You know, bad groups.
Well, not just bad groups. I mean, what we're seeing over in action is a lot's going on. A lot of the kind of the super spy agencies, both good and bad, are being taken out.
Yes. So that's where I'm really interested, because it seems like this group is very infiltrated into everything. They're able to take out the best of the best, good, bad, indifferent. They're able to take them down. And this one, for me, I don't know what it is. It just, it's the story I'm most interested for.
Okay, interesting. For me, it was the middle of the road. I think I was a little disappointed by a little of the pacing. It's like you tease Green Arrow and then he's not really in it, and then you end on two other characters or whatnot and tease this other thing, and it just felt tacked on to the story.
Yeah, that last page, I would agree with you. It was really kind of tacked on there, and I was like, eh, all right. That part, the part I liked was the Batgirl part. I guess that was the part that got me excited.
I can see that. And again, it wasn't bad. If anyone who's read this, they get to this last page, it's clear which title I've dropped that I may want to pick up. Let me know if I should.
Cool.
And if you don't know, then clearly I shouldn't know.
I'm not reading it, so let me know if I should read it as well.
And that takes us to the last story. And for me, these all just kind of went downhill a little bit. Not much, but a little bit.
This was the worst for me.
There were aspects of this where it's like, okay, the Justice League is out on the far edge of space near the Source Wall boundary rescuing people. And there's like, okay, there's this one ship and there's billions of people on it. I'm like, how big is this ship?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, that's kind of nonsensical.
Nonsensical is a good way to put it. And then we go back into the mental boardroom, I think they called it, where the Justice League could meet without physically being present or whatever. It's like, come on, this is an X-Men shtick. I don't need it with the Justice League.
Yeah.
It just...
The next part was the part that got me.
Oh, with who to call in?
Yes, that was the part that got me. I was like, oh, come on.
You know what got me about that? Is they had this decent two-page splash of, oh, we should call in everybody. And then I'm looking at this, and I'm like, everybody's not as many people as it used to be.
Yeah, that. And I also got the total vibe, which was weird. It just reminded me so much of when they were trying to do Avengers World, you know, after – I think it was when Hickman was in there. Basically, everyone's an Avenger, and Avengers meant nothing. If everyone's in the Justice League, you know, we'll just call everyone. I mean, it just seems like they're going to try to expand the team almost like what they did with the Avengers. And I think that's a bit much and kind of heavy-handed. I was like, I'm not down for that.
Are they really expanding the team, or are they just bringing in the Terrifics, some of the surviving Titans, the other two Justice League teams of Dark and Odyssey, I guess it is. And then, like, one or two other characters. I mean, not even all the Batman family characters show up in this thing.
No, it's just all the people that I guess they're trying to find somewhere to put them. I don't know.
I think you could have doubled the number of characters on this fairly easily without too much trouble.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just, like, I see the direction they're going, and I was just like, okay, I mean, when there's an earthly threat, you know, something's coming destroying planets and galaxies, you know, the last person I want on the teams are like Catwoman and Green Arrow, and like, what are they gonna do? Nothing. It's like they're useless. But I mean, so that makes me laugh, you know, when the world threats, they got to find something that the guy with the arrow can do, you know.
Well, yeah, I think particularly what went down with Catwoman and stuff with the Batrimony, I mean, clearly that's how bad it is. They need everyone,
even though you went through a breakup of the wedding, you're on the team. Let's make this happen.
It seemed like half the Bat family characters weren't here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed like I don't want to say a random assortment, because it was very clear where some of these characters were getting pulled from.
Yeah.
It just didn't really impress me, because I think there are even former Justice Leaguers in the current continuity they could have brought in.
I agree, because I looked at this and I was just thinking, it's not really the A-team that I would have thought we need to bring in the best. I mean, some of them, yes, definitely. I can see some of the people on here. I'm like, okay, yeah, I can see these people, you know. There's a Lantern, you know, there's a Lantern. Okay, there's, you know, a Shazam. There's a Supergirl or a Superwoman. I can see them, you know, doing things. But you start getting into, okay, here's... I hate to keep picking on that Green Arrow and Red Arrow. It's like, what are they going to do? You know, okay, we need two Arrow people.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's the point? I guess it's just, they're going to have them on some kind of side quest, helping people get to shelter, I guess. Who knows?
I guess. There were a couple of these. It's like, again, seem fairly obscure and not ones I would have picked either.
Yeah, and then it got even weirder when you get to the Perpetua part.
Yeah, I just, I don't know, the whole thing with where they're going with this, I mean, to me, the ending was already starting to hit, I don't say the reset button, but was progressing another storyline or whatever.
Yeah, and how does that story fit with the first story? I was looking at that going, is he that or is he that? Like, what is that?
Yeah, yeah.
It made no sense. I was like, okay, this is completely, they're not talking to each other.
I think it's intentional with an all will be revealed kind of a deal. Yeah. Just from the solicits, I have an inkling of where it's going.
Okay, I kind of didn't read them. I just bought because I didn't want to get spoiled because I did read a few solicits and it ruined that Teen Titans and Deathstroke thing. I was like, oh, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I hate it when they give away story points in another solicit, but I think part of it is their pacing of stories is such they almost have to.
Exactly, exactly. But overall, see, what was weird is this wasn't a bad book. There was good stuff in here. I liked the first story. Mm-hmm. I really liked the second one just because of the Batgirl portion. And this one just ended on a dud. I was like, all right, Tiny in writing it, and I didn't enjoy it. So I think there's potential here. Are you on board for the Forever, or what, DC, you're the villain? Are you on for this event?
I'm getting a lot of the stuff anyways, but to me, this is another kind of litmus test for the DC universe of, is it going in a direction I want to go?
Ah, so, and it may not be. They're doing something else weird with these books. I don't know if you noticed that from the solicits with the special covers.
I hadn't really paid attention to that.
Okay, they're coming out, and I can't remember, but they're having these. Okay, normally they have like the cover A and then the cover B. And, you know, they're free to order. What they did with this is the cover B, which they always have the better artists on cover B, and they have this You're the Villain special type thing, and they might put like some special artist doing this special cover of the villain. They're charging $1 more for it now.
Yeah, that I'm not all in for. I'm all out on that. I'll go for the regular cost. I'm cheap.
Exactly. So I'm like, I've been cover B's the whole time. I'm like, I don't think I want to pony up $5 just for some kind of special cover. So I'm out.
Yeah. They've got a couple of one-shots or whatever they're at least teasing here in the back. I'll get a few, but I don't know if I'll get them all. And I really, again, I'm here for the superheroes. You got to have good villains to have heroes. I get it. But it doesn't really have me excited about the direction of the DC universe when the villains are what's getting the focus.
Yeah, and I understand exactly what you mean with that. I think the story that has been sitting with me the thing that I'm most interested in was the build up for Leviathan, because it kind of came out of nowhere. We reviewed it like the first issue when they first brought up Leviathan in Action Comics.
Well, that's when they brought it up there, but that wasn't the origin of Leviathan.
Okay, yeah, I that's just the first time I kind of remember. I wasn't reading it very or paying attention as much, but I thought it was just kind of like a one-off. And it turns out, I'm like, oh, well, no, it's going to be something big. I was like, so I was kind of surprised.
Yeah, it's surprising how big it's going to be, but it's also something that spins out of both the Silencer stuff and also, I think, out of the Batman Inc. stuff.
Oh, and see, I wasn't reading Batman Inc., and I dropped Silencer. I was one of the few. I held on to a lot of the New Age of DC heroes, and I dropped Silencer probably after about a dozen issues or so.
I can understand that. It was one that I hung on to, but it was not certain that I would do that.
Okay, yeah, I can't remember how many, but I dropped it, and that's probably why I didn't see it there.
Yeah. For me, the stories were of different qualities, but not radically so. I'm going to go with a B on this. I thought it was okay. I liked the first story more than the second, and certainly more than the third.
Yeah, I went back and forth. I almost went with a B, and for the 25 cents, I gave it a B+. I was like, hey, for this price and getting decent writers and little chunks of story, I was happy. So B+.
I can see that. I guess I didn't give it that bonus because I was taking off points for the I'm not crazy about the direction it's going in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So there's that.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
This is Uncanny X-Men number 17. Now, there apparently was some controversy around this one.
Yes, and I was not aware when I ordered it.
Neither was I. I wasn't even aware. I knew there was when I read it, but I wasn't sure what it was about. And I read through, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, there's some controversy. I wonder what that was about. So I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, okay. this to me was another kind of death of an X-Men aftermath kind of an issue. I mean, we actually see the death of the character here in flashback.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of announced at the end of the previous issue, which is like, okay, kind of a cliffhanger reveal, whatever. There have been many of these sort of things before. There will be many of them again in the future. And I thought there was one thing they did in this issue that really undercut, in my mind, the entire issue.
Oh, what was that?
Well, the whole thing was about the death of a longtime X-Men character.
Yes.
And when, who was it, got up to speak, she was basically listing off all of, I guess it was Karma, all the other X-Men who have died.
Yeah, tons and tons, just listing them.
Well, not only are there tons that are being listed, many of them are there in the, I don't want to say the audience, but you know what I mean, there at the funeral.
That's awesome.
Because they've come back.
Exactly. Don't you remember when you died? To the people in the crowd, that's awesome.
And when you're basically listing off, here's, I don't know, a few dozen X-Men who have died, and I'm like, well, yeah, I guess that's not that unique of a storyline to kill one off, is it? And then when you're realizing a lot of them are still there, then the death doesn't really matter that much. This is one of those characters that's been around long enough
yeah.
that I expect the character to undie at some point.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But you know what's funny? I was kind of like reading off the list, and I wasn't paying attention to all the background characters. Now that you say it, it did kind of make me chuckle, because yeah, some of the people she named are right there. That's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but now, what was the controversy? Because I don't know what was controversial. Is it the scene of what happened?
Well, apparently when they do the flashback of the death.
Okay, because that was the most impactful moment in this comic to me.
Well, and it was clearly a hate crime. This is not an X-Men who goes down fighting a supervillain or saving the day or something like that. Almost kind of sort of wrong place, wrong time, wound up against some mutant haters and suffered for it. But apparently there was something about either the dialogue or something that a contingent of people found offensive.
It felt like, to me, if this was a normal girl, it felt like it was getting almost like it was headed towards a rape.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. That was the impactful part for me. I was reading it. I was like, wow, this feels kind of rapey. I know that's not a word, but I was like, and then some other stuff happened and the power came out and then it turned into a hate crime. And I was just like, wow, that's, and then it was just kind of like, wow, that was very, it kind of socks you in the gut a little bit when you read that.
Well, I would say it was effectively told.
Yes,
I thought
very.
In my opinion, it was well told. Obviously, there were some people who found it offensive, and yes. It's unfortunate they found it offensive and that it was offensive to them. Honestly, I don't understand exactly how they found it offensive, and I'm not trying to say that they shouldn't have or didn't, but that I don't get it.
I don't get the offensive thing either. I didn't know there was controversy around it. The only thing I thought is maybe because it was so gut-wrenching realistically told, but I don't know what it was.
It's one of those things that the mutants are always kind of an allegory for any sort of hate crime, whatever's, you know, the downtrodden group or whatever du jour.
Okay.
Be it, you know, either at one point gays or, you know, black people or Muslims or, you know, whatever.
Anything, yeah.
Yeah. And I think stories need to be able to tell things, stories like that. And in this case, show kind of the horrors of a hate crime or whatever. And it's certainly not like they were trying to make it out like the perpetrators of the crime were the least bit either remorseful or have any sort of good connotation to them, if you know what I mean.
They were
shown as the bad people of the group.
By the way, if I seem slightly distracted, I was typing it in and I was like, they called it like, yeah, I can see all the controversy. I just searched in Google. I was like, wow, yeah, a lot of controversy. It's like,
so it was certainly there.
Makes no sense.
And maybe I'm just, you know, living blissfully, you know, unaware of certain things or whatever. I can see how this is an allegory for a hate crime that could actually happen. Obviously not with a mutant, but with something else.
Yeah. What they were talking about online, the thing that they said was like a trans panic, a murder. So basically like, I guess the way that they found out she was a mutie was like, be like almost if they found a guy dressed up like a girl and guys found out and got pissed and did something. That's, I think, what they're associating it with.
And I can understand that, but I guess
But to me, I didn't read it that way.
I certainly didn't either.
And I think unless you're in that group and you're reading more into it than what was there, I just read it as mutant hating, like any other type of mutant hating. So, and that's where it's like, you got to be kind of careful, because like sometimes I think people internalize things a little bit too much, because he's not really speaking about that. He's speaking about mutants, you know, and people that don't like mutants.
I don't know that they read too much into it, or just that they read it from a different perspective.
A different perspective. That's what I would say. Yeah, their perspective, maybe their experiences, and they internalized it. Because that scene, what was weird is I read it completely different. I read it almost like a group of guys trying to almost set up and rape a girl. And I was like, oh, I was kind of terrified of her. And then it flipped into mutant hate, but it was like a real gut punch for me. I was like, wow, that was powerful.
Yeah, I thought it was well told, and certainly it evoked a response in a large part of the audience in different ways.
Yeah.
And I think the author, who is, I believe, apologized for some of that and didn't mean it offensively or whatever, is taking a good route on how to handle it.
Yeah.
And to me, it's one of those things, the fact that there is any sort of real world allegory connection or similarities in and of itself kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
That, you know, somebody could actually relate to hate crimes as you know, part of either the victim group or whatever. And the sad truth is there's far too much hate crime going out there. And I do think having it discussed in some way, shape, or form in comic books is not outrageous or inappropriate.
No, I don't. You can't have taboo subjects, because you know, comics talk about our world and what we see. You know, when the Vietnam War was going on, they addressed it in comics. When the Civil Rights was going on, they addressed it in comics. So this is something that's happening. I'm not saying even that's what the writer was thinking, but it's not something that should be taboo. It just should be dealt with consciously and carefully to not offend, you know?
If they had had the perpetrators of the crime being the more sympathetic group and the one that was put as the wronged party or something,
yeah,
then okay, that is offensive.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying somebody couldn't and wouldn't find as it was offensive. Again, I'm not trying to downplay anyone's, you know, feelings or whatever there. I'm just saying it's not like something that looked to set out to offend.
I would agree. Now, the other thing that really, I guess you could say, is impactful, maybe to me at least, you have some controversy between Cyclops and Wolverine and their reactions to this incident. And I don't see why. I kind of see, but I can see why Cyclops maybe was upset. I can definitely see where Wolverine, what he did. And that's probably a way I would have reacted if it's somebody I cared about, that I would want to have reacted, I should say.
I felt both acted kind of in character. I maybe wouldn't have predicted they would have done these things, but when they did them, it's like, yeah, I can see that. And the friction between them is in character too, just both in general and in specific here.
Yeah.
For me, what I found, I don't want to say offensive, but what I disliked the most about the issue was the ending.
The ending. Oh yeah, yeah. That was one thing I was like, okay. I was like, what's going on here?
Well, and that's the thing, is it ends on what I would put as kind of a quote unquote reveal. It's definitely a cliffhanger of sorts. It's not really a reveal, because they tell something out there, but they're not going to reveal it until next issue at best. And it's like, where did this come from? It had absolutely nothing to do with the entire rest of the issue. Just kind of drop that out there to tease you to get you to the next issue.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was like, I didn't know where that came from. And I don't think it came from anywhere. I think it's just something he threw out there because he wants to write about this next.
Yeah, it seemed like a sharp left turn out of nowhere. And speaking of nowhere, I usually pull up the solicits on these things just to see what the blurb is and stuff. And the question I have for you about this issue.
Okay.
Did you see the Black King of the Hellfire Club anywhere in here?
No. Was he in here?
Well, because the solicit, and I'll read it first, the X-Men lose one of their own. Okay, check. That's cool. The rest of the solicit. Then the new Black King of the Hellfire Club makes a move. He was nowhere to be found, what? As far as I'm not even sure who the current Black King of the Hellfire Club is.
I'm just like, I didn't see him in here.
He certainly wasn't identified. I didn't see any Hellfire Club in here that I could think of.
Me neither.
So, I mean, to me, the solicit was a little off. This was a tease there at the end just to kind of throw a swerve at us of, ooh, what will happen next? to me, it's a little bit of a writing crutch.
Yeah, I would agree with that. What was weird is I felt like the issue was, okay, it's not a quote-unquote action issue typically, you know, because of the subject you're dealing with, a funeral for a friend. It started really slow. I was like, okay. And then it got real impactful. I was like, wow. And then the Wolverine thing happened. I was like, wow, that's impactful too. And I felt the raw emotion from both characters, him and Cyclops. I was like, that's cool. But it kind of had like the boring beginning for me, a little bit boring. And then it had this weird end. I was like, that had nothing to do with the story. And so it was so well written, yet at the same time fell on its face.
Yeah, it was a really weird blend of that. I think there were some really cool ideas. I think there was some effective scenes. There were also a few other parts that just didn't quite work.
Yeah, so I'm feeling the same thing you did there. At the same time, I enjoyed the issue. It's just, give me some hints as to why it's going to end like that, and maybe I would have enjoyed the ending more, because right now I just feel like, all right, story over, move on, let's go here.
Well, to me, it wasn't even a story over. It's kicking off the next story with a tease.
Exactly. Yeah, next story arc. We're done.
So I was a little disappointed with this. Again, we're going to see other, you know, death of a character aftermath type things with the X-Men. And we'll probably even see another one with this dead character having come back and died again at some point if you wait long enough.
Yeah, that's true. Ad nauseum.
So it kind of undercut the whole thing there. Had some good moments, had some not so much. I'm going to go with a B- on this. I think you can do better. And we already know that this kind of next arc may be the final one under this creative team, because isn't Hickman coming in to redo everything with Power of X and House of X?
Yes, he is. Hickman is back.
So hopefully that'll be good.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you're saying is true. Maybe he's rushing out this next story arc because Hickman's like, I'm taking over. Time to move on. But I enjoyed it just a tiny bit more than you because it was so impactful. I went ahead and gave him a B, even though that did not make sense at the end. And it started a little bit slow. I went with a B. It's decent, but I would say the caveat would be it's not for a faint of heart if, you know, violent or hate crime type things are something that really affect you. Don't read this, because that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I'd like a better understanding of kind of how and why people found it offensive, because they certainly did, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
So, shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
This is Uncle Scrooge number 44, or 448, if you want to go for the parenthetical, I guess, legacy numbering. you have not read Uncle Scrooge before, have you?
I've never read it. This is a first.
Okay. When I think it went over to Boom a while back after it had been out of circulation for a bit and they brought the titles back, I jumped on. I sampled, I think, all of them.
Okay.
Uncle Scrooge was the one I stuck with.
Okay. So which ones were there? Uncle Scrooge, Donald Duck, I'm assuming?
Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, and maybe Walt Disney Stories?
Okay.
Cool. I forget.
Something
like that. There may not have been a Donald Duck, but there were a couple. These are basically reprinting stories from overseas from, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, give or take, so, you know, whatever they pull or whatever. There's typically more than one story per issue. And I would say that they're kind of almost stereotypical sitcom kind of stories in ways. Like this main
it's
one here.
It's uncanny that you say that.
Yeah, the main one here, what do they call it in the issue? The Busy Newsroom?
Busy Newsroom, yep.
It's funny because they called it there on the page, but in the table of contents, they called it the Crowded Newsroom. So apparently there was a little bit of confusion as to, I guess, translation or whatever. But it was essentially, Scrooge McDuck apparently has a newspaper he runs on a shoestring staff reprinting yesterday's news from other papers with some edits. Somebody's going to do a full-page ad, so they're going to come visit the place, and Donald and this other duck, Feathery or whatever, whom I'm unfamiliar with. I've read a lot
Me
of
neither.
Duck stuff, but I hadn't seen this one before, so I guess it's another nephew of Scrooge's. They basically have to pull off the quick change and act as if they are everybody at this company.
Yeah.
I mean,
That was kind of interesting. That's kind of like the plot.
Yeah, that's kind of like what you would almost expect if it were like an I Love Lucy kind of a sitcom sort of thing.
Yeah, it was so funny because you use the word sitcom, and right now my favorite TV series are literally sitcoms because you work all day, and you know, I watch Game of Thrones, I have to think, you know, and remember, and you know, all the plots and stuff. It's some dumb entertainment that you don't have to think, you can just sit back and chuckle, and that's what this is. That's exactly what this is.
Yeah, it's wacky fun, and it's something that's easier to pull off in a comic book than a TV show, but these are the same sort of shenanigans that you would expect to find on either, you know, classic sitcoms of days past or whatever kind of stuff they would do, either a kid sitcom on the Disney Channel or something like that, you know?
I agree. Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of interesting, and they had some nice little plot twist in there, like when a character loses their glasses, which made it kind of funny and stressful for the characters. But it read just like a TV sitcom, except cartoons, which makes it easier and entertaining, you know, a done in one story.
Yeah, it was fun. It was entertaining is the right way to put it. And then we had another story, which was a shorter one, and it's basically Uncle Scrooge has a huge tax bill, and it's like, well, what's he going to do about it? Because he certainly doesn't want to pay it.
Exactly.
And then it's either move or find a way to make money with his money warehouse or whatever. So they decide to turn it into a like an amusement park kind of a thing.
Called Bin World.
Bin World. And of course, that goes about as well as you would expect.
Yeah, let kids play in your piles of money. Go swimming in it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, again, sitcom ideas that just is wrong from the get-go, yet they do it anyways.
Yes.
These aren't deep stories, but they're usually fun, and they're surprisingly kind of meaty and deep given the length of them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it was kind of it was entertaining, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... There's no depth here. It's something if you want, almost like a palate cleanser if you're reading. You know, you read a lot of stuff that's very serious or has a lot to it. You can go in here and read and not think and just chuckle. And you don't have to remember what happened for the next issue. You're not going to end on a cliffhanger. It's just something fun.
Yeah. What I enjoy, though, is not only are they different from everything else I'm reading, they're always fun and enjoyable, even if a bit, you know, nonsensical or wacky in places. But there's enough material in there that I feel like I'm getting a lot more story in one of these issues than sometimes an entire arc on another title.
Very true. Because I guess what happened in this first story probably would have been a 6-issue trade in normal comics.
Somewhere in there, they certainly would have paused at the end of the issue for the guy to reveal, oh, I've lost my glasses. I must retrace my steps.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. What will they do?
Exactly. So now, do they not make current like cartoon type stuff here in the U.S.? Because they're all reprints. One was from Italy. The other one was from Denmark. So I don't know. Do they just have tons of this material overseas? Or what?
Oh, they've
what
got tons that? Of it overseas because the Duck stuff is really popular in certain parts of the world.
Okay.
And the other thing is my understanding of the way the license works is once you do a story, it's kind of communal property to the license holders.
Oh, so they're printing this for free.
Not for free. IDW is paying for the license.
But they pay for the license, but then they don't have to pay the artist or the writers. They just kind of print it and send it out.
They have to pay the translator, I think.
Oh, the translator. That's pretty much it. So it's very low cost.
I think so. I could be wrong on that, but that was my understanding, and that's part of why it doesn't make sense for many current publishers to be producing new material.
Ah.
Because then you're essentially giving it to, you know, the pool, if you will.
Exactly. So they're just recycling the stuff. Well, it makes complete sense now.
Well, and I think over in Italy and a few other parts of the world, the characters are just way more popular. They've got better sales, better audience over there. So it's worth investing the time and money over there.
Yeah. My last exposure to this stuff was honestly, you remember the DuckTales cartoon?
Yeah.
I don't remember what year that came out, but I remember the song, you know, DuckTales.
Well, there was the original one, but there's also the remake that's got David Tennant as Scrooge.
Oh, okay. I don't remember which one I saw. It was when I was young, you know, so it's probably the original one. You know, I'm 45. So, But I remember those cartoons, and they were enjoyable. But and this did kind of remind me of it. It wasn't exact, but it was fun. It was entertaining. On board, you know, I don't think I'd be on board long term, just because even though they give you a lot of material, I was surprised it's a $5 comic.
Yeah, but I feel that there's enough kind of content in it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's kind of weird because it's like I said, I see this as almost something I would really enjoy if I probably cut back another big chunk of my titles just to have that palate cleanser and read something that you don't have to think about and just have fun with it. Mm-hmm. This seems like it would be a really fun book, and I'm just still a little bit too heavy in all the other stuff.
Yeah, it's certainly not for everybody. I think there's certain people that would just be bored by it or whatever, but I enjoy it a lot for what it is. And
yeah.
The Life and Times of Uncle Scrooge was a great series. It was 12 issues. They've got it as hardcovers and stuff. Highly recommend that. Did a back issue spotlight on it. And Scrooge is one of those. He's just the ultimate miser. He'll pinch every penny. That's how he gets and stays rich. And just the wackiness that comes out of that's kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. It was a fun cartoon when I watched it, and this was enjoyable stuff. I didn't find it not enjoyable. I was just thinking, oh, reprint stuff. This must be something that's pretty inexpensive. And I went to the front title. I was like, $4.99. I mean, that you get the material, but I was just kind of surprised. I was like, well, the license must be expensive.
Yeah, I it's Disney. I don't think it's cheap.
Yeah. Anything with Disney, I'm sure they're asking for top dollar.
Yeah.
As we see by the price of Marvel comics.
But this is something that's also stuck around for quite some time over multiple publishers.
Yeah, yeah. So I think for a lot of people that listen, they probably would enjoy this. I was not bored by it. I was entertained by it. It's not deep. It's fun. So if you're into fun comics, this is a fun comic.
Yeah. For me, it's a solid B. It's always reliable. It's always entertaining. I will admit sometimes I put it off a little bit because it's not the quickest of reads, because there's a lot that happens in these things. Even if it's not, you know, the deepest of stories, there's plenty of the story.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it's a thick book. Like, I'm reading the PDF and it's 37 pages of material.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff. And I'm really close to you again, but this one I liked a little bit less. I give it a B-. It wasn't that it was bad. It's just, it's not my wheelhouse, so it's not my favorite. But I can see the people who would enjoy this. And honestly, if I move some stuff around, this is something that I would definitely consider. Mm-hmm. Because it almost reminds me, it's just so accessible, fun. It's not Tom Zoller, but it's like almost like on that type of a thing without the emotion in there. It's a funny book written very accessibly. Anybody can jump in at any issue and have fun with it.
It's a true all ages book.
Yes, it is.
Because I think it's something that you could get younger readers into and would enjoy, but there's also something there for us older readers.
Yeah, here I'm a 45-year-old, and I read Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, it took me a while to get onto it, but you know, I enjoy it. So,
hey, I enjoyed it too. So, with all that being said, it brought out a feeling in me that is the same thing that I do with my TV, is that I use sitcoms to relax. And this is something that would make me relax. Whereas if I'm reading Justice League, I feel like I can't relax or you're going to miss something.
Well, certainly it's easier to relax with that kind of a story than, say, the Uncanny X-Men we just read that was a little bit of a downer in places.
Exactly. So that's why I said you almost need this lightness. Like, the book that's filling the spot for me right now is one that Drew had recommended from Lion Forge, which just ended, so maybe this will fill that hole, was something called Sellies. And it was about, you know, people that worked in a cell phone store. And it was kind of like not really deep, just talking about their daily stuff, funny stuff that happened in the cell phone store. And so this, even though it's completely different, you know, cartoon ducks versus cell phone workers, I think you need to have that book in there just so you don't stress yourself out when you're reading.
Well, and there's a lot to be said for something that's not only a done in one, in this case, you know, two in one or whatever, something to where you can come in, get a story, and get out.
Yeah. Now, one thing I was going to tell you, I am not completely current because I've only read through, I think, like half of my stack. But so far, I have really enjoyed Deceased. Did you read it?
I read it. and had only pre-ordered the first and decided that was enough.
Ah, okay. Too gruesome for you.
Not only gruesome, it's clearly not in continuity, which is fine. I've enjoyed non-continuity stuff at DC, such as Injustice. It was just, I don't need a kind of a Walking Dead riff in the DC universe.
Ah, see, I thought you'd be on board because I know you're a big Tom Taylor fan, and I think Tom Taylor wrote Injustice too, right?
He did.
Yeah, I'm guessing he's not a continuity guy. He's a great writer, but he doesn't like to be within the shackles and bounds of this is what's happening over here.
It was very much the first issue of here's the concept, let me cram it into the DC universe.
Yeah. So is this like a mini series? Do you know?
6 issues.
Oh, okay. Well, 6 issues of fun. I enjoyed it. I was like, okay, give me some DC zombies. I kind of like the Marvel zombies that came out a while back. I'm enjoying it. So are you still keeping up to date with your comics?
I am. I read all 12 that I got this week.
Only 12. So sad.
That's not counting, you know, Free Comic Book Day stuff, but I kind of treat that as separate from the new regular weekly influx of comics.
Wow. So yeah, you really, really, really cut back. And what's your favorite? Out of what you read?
Man, Adventures of the Super Sons was a lot of fun. Usually is. Be sorry to see that go after 2 more issues. Age of X-Men Prisoner X was okay. Batman, man, that was probably one of the weakest ones of the bunch this time around.
I agree. Batman it's still kind of weak. Even though the Nightmares is over, I'm just like, I'm just not feeling the Tom King Batman.
If it keeps going like this, I'm going to have to seriously decide, yeah, I've been getting it for, you know, a ton of issues. Do I get out or not?
Yeah, because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, okay, everyone kept saying Nightmares is going to end because I was like, I'm done with this hook. It's horrible. And then I got this one. And I was like, okay, it's a little more brutal. Okay, but like, it still doesn't feel like one of the best books at DC. It just feels like Batman should be the best book.
I tell you, if I see somebody like Dan Didio or Jim Lee or somebody like that at the DC booth at San Diego this year, I'm going to have to go up and thank them for hiring, you know, Tom King and stuff, because it has freed up so much of my time.
I would love to hear that. Please record it when you tell them. And they put him on for 105 issues in his contract. I was like, oh my gosh.
They can't possibly have contracted him for that.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. I was like, well, that's
he may have a 105-issue game plan, but they could not possibly have signed a contract for that.
Yeah, because when he said that, I was like, that's very specific. I'm like, who plans out to the T like that? That's weird.
Well, who on the business side would say, you know what, that's going to go for how many years, and we're certain we're going to be, you know, wanting this for that long?
Exactly. That wouldn't make any sense. It's like, to me, when I heard that, I was like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of what I'm not liking is attributable to him. Not necessarily his fault, but certainly in his direction.
Yeah. Right now, the stuff I'm enjoying the most is actually the Bendis stuff over in Superman in Action.
Yeah, Bendis is actually doing some fun stuff over at DC. Not only that stuff, I'm enjoying Young Justice.
Oh, yeah.
We're starting to see it tie into a few other things. So I'm curious kind of what he's building towards with all of that.
Yep.
Both Deathstroke and Justice League, man, didn't really work for me this much. I'm only getting the Deathstroke because it was tying into the Titan stuff, so I wasn't expecting it to work well for me. I just thought this was not a great Justice League issue either.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. In Deathstroke, like you said, if it wasn't tying into the Teen Titans story, that Terminus. But that being said, that was a very powerful issue too. You did read it, right?
Oh yeah, I read it.
Okay, because like what was weird is like they put like that little caption or a little box showing all the creators, and then you flip the page and the story keeps going, and then the impactful stuff happens. I was like, man, you could have very easily skipped that thinking it was a preview, because they've been doing these previews at the end of all the DC comics for other stuff.
Specifically for Last Night on Earth.
Yeah. So I'm like, man, can you imagine how many people flipped and then just like, oh, okay, this is the end and that's just the preview because it's about that length? And miss that scene. I bet you there's a lot.
It's easy to have happen. I've had that happen to me in the past. That's why these days I flip to the end.
Yeah, you got to be careful because they do that. And this was a trick. This was the trick one because they put in the preview and all the issues. You get there. And then I flipped it and I was surprised. It wasn't who I thought it would be with what happened, which was spoiled in previews. Thank you very much, DC, for spoiling it for me.
Yeah, but I was unimpressed by the spoiler there too.
It kind of reminded me of what happened in The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how it will play out. Because there's still a comics going on there.
I'm not so curious that I'm going to continue reading that title to find out.
Me neither. I am not on board with Deathstroke. It's not. It's been horrible for me. I guess I'm just not a Jason Priest fan.
Christopher Priest.
Or Christopher. Oh, I'm thinking of Jason Priestley from 90210. Oh, my God. Christopher Priest. My bad.
Jason Priestley's done a good job on, what's the name of the detective show he was doing? I've done an episode on it, too.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember.
Private Eyes.
Private Eyes. Yep, yep. That's the one.
Actually did well on it. So, anyways.
Sorry to mess up your name, Mr. Priest.
Stuff was all right this week. Nothing that was just brilliant. A few things were a little lackluster, but only 12 things, so it was quick reading.
Yeah, and since we just recorded on Saturday?
Saturday.
And now it's Tuesday. The only news that really came out was I was surprised. Patrick Gleason has signed an exclusive with Marvel. He's leaving, which means we're going to miss him over at Superman.
Yeah, he's done quite a bit over at DC for quite a while, so maybe he just wanted to, you know, draw some of the characters or whatever, or they just gave him a better offer.
I was surprised. I was like, I think what it is, maybe it's either he wants to stretch his wings and try something different, you know, challenge himself a little bit, or like you said, just money, you know.
Or both. I mean, I don't know what he's, you know, particularly passionate about in terms of characters and stuff. It may be that he wants to go do some of the Marvel characters.
Yeah, and I think they announced he's going to be on Spider-Man.
He's certainly doing a story in an upcoming Spider-Man. It's unclear what his regular gig's going to be. It may or may not be Spider-Man. It's unclear.
That's true. So I would like to see him. I think he drew a great Superman. I think he drew really good. I mean, he still does Charlotte very well. I'm interested to see him, you know, switch sides, see his art over there on the Marvel side. It'll be good.
Yeah. Yeah, should be fun. So let's see. Coming up, we've got the preview Spotlight 140 for the June previews. The deadline for that's going to be June 8th. That previews actually comes out on, I think, the 29th. So we got a little bit before even we see the online solicits and stuff. But yep. They're obviously ramping up for summer. There'll be plenty of stuff. Hopefully we'll get some good clips. We had, again, quite a few this last time. So thanks, everybody. Regular format, one clip per pick, and there's instructions on the forum if you have any questions. And then the following Saturday, June 15th, will be the Comic Book Page teleconference.
Oh, cool.
7 p.m. Central Time, we get on and we talk about what we talk about.
Fun stuff.
And we probably won't have one of those in July because it'll probably hit around the time of Comic-Con.
Oh, okay. So this will be the last one for a couple months then.
Probably till August or whatever. But if the schedule works out and there's enough demand or whatever, we'll see what we can do.
All right, cool.
So anything else? That pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Batman and the Outsiders number 1 from DC, Captain America 10 from Marvel, and Excellence number 1 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.